Hello, friends and folks, and welcome to Playlist Podcast, a podcast from Scanlight Media where we talk about what we've been playing lately. I'm Six Detmar.
And I'm Jennifer Uncle.
And we've been, you know, lockdown continues, everybody's working from home, and it's been plenty of opportunities to play video games, but I think for both of us, perhaps a fewer than you might expect.
Yeah, like I took a bit of a vacation recently, but I don't know. I felt pretty unfocused, and I spent more of my time going through the entirety of Cowboy Bebop than playing games.
Yeah, for my part, I've been entertaining house guests for the last week, so that's been keeping me more busy than I would expect. And also, like, I have played games, but it has limited the games I played because it's my sister and my nephews that we're visiting. And so it's like, it's not like I can't play games, but it is like I can't play as much, let's say, Apex Legends as a random example. I kind of have to aim towards games that I can play with younger kids around. So that has weighed. Is there anything burning that you need to get off your chest? Any immediate, you know, game stuff you need to get into?
I don't know if I'd say immediate, but I did want to talk a little bit about Desperados 3, because that kind of came out of nowhere for me, and it's remarkable that it even exists at all. So Desperados Wanted Dead or Alive was a game that came out in, like, late 90s, my grandfather had a copy of it, so I played it when I was at a pretty young age. It's a weird sort of game it's part of a genre that's actually very thin in terms of games that do this particular thing. And that's basically isometric stealth action. Like, if you've ever heard of Commandos, that's basically the other big series that had this sort of gameplay style.
Okay, so is it also squad-based?
Yeah, you have levels where you're just playing as one person, but you also have levels where you have three or four other people with you. And basically how it works is that it's in a Wild West sort of setting, and you basically keep an eye out on enemies' vision cones, which move much, much quicker than you'd expect in a stealth game. Like, guards just look very... Guards are just looking in your direction almost constantly, so you have to time things pretty airtight. But also, each character you're controlling has their own unique set of abilities. For example, one of the first characters you meet within Desperados 3 has a medicine bag, and if you throw that medicine bag out, and it enters someone else's view cone, they'll walk up to it, get temporarily dazed, so you can run up to them and stab them with a syringe or something like that. And it's one of the few games where not only does it help to constantly quick save and quick load, that's part of the design philosophy behind it, especially in the newest one, where the top bar is menu, quick save, quick load. And if it's been more than a minute since you've quick saved, a timer will appear basically being like, okay, it's been X amount of seconds since you've quick saved.
So how does this manifest in the game? Like, is it very much a game about, like, hidden information where you need to quick save because you'll learn things and then need to roll back to take advantage of that information, or?
I'd say it's a game where you're definitely experimenting with different methods for getting through each encounter. And the thing with each encounter is that the levels are chock full of enemies, so if you set off the alarm, things can go very bad for you very quickly. So the idea is that you take each fight one step at a time and put together a plan of action for each unique setup like that, and quick save so you aren't too frustrated when you need to roll back because whatever you try next doesn't work. Like, part of the tutorial tips are like, we expect you to fail pretty often in this, and quick saving and quick loading ensures that that's not too big of a deal for you. So you can just keep rolling with the punches and figuring out what works. It's almost like a puzzle game in that regard.
I see. So I'm guessing from the name that it's like American Wild West themed.
Basically, yeah. The main character is Cooper, who wears a 10-gallon hat, sort of cowboy hat, and has two six shooters. The doctor's name is Doc McCoy. A little bit later on in Desperados 3, around the time when the demo ended, you meet a trapper whose whole thing is that he has a gigantic fucking bear trap that he can camouflage pretty well. So he could just lay it out, whistle, and someone will just walk into a bear trap and die because it's a gigantic bear trap.
So perhaps a little cartoonish.
I'd say so, yeah.
Okay. And you mentioned Commando. Do you personally have experience with Commando, or are you just aware of that as a touchstone?
I was just aware of it. Like, my main history with these sorts of games was with the first Desperado. And, it did get a sequel, Desperados 2, like, late 2000s, that Atari published, but it didn't make waves at all, even with people who liked the first game. So, seeing it revived by THQ Nordic in 2020 is a bit of a trip.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah, that seems like THQ Nordic's MO, which is stuff that you're like, okay, sure.
It helps that the people that they got to make it, a company named MeMeMe, also ended up making a game in 2016 called Shadow Tactics. And like, after I played the Desperados 3 demo, I was like, oh, okay, this seems really cool. I'd like to see what else these people have done. So Shadow Tactics was on sale. I picked it up, and it's startling just how much of the same, just how many of the same mechanics they've carried over directly from Shadow Tactics to Desperados 3. Like, same tutorial hint system, same quick save timer at the top. It feels very much like they've taken elements from this other game they've made, and like they've tweaked it a little bit. Like I'd say that the interface changes are a lot nicer, and one big difference is that you can press a button in Desperados 3 to freeze everyone and issue them individual orders, so you can take out two guards with one strike without alerting anyone. In Shadow Tactics, that doesn't pause the game, so you still need to be hidden somewhere while you're doing it. And that seems like a big quality of life change between the two of them. But also, I don't particularly mind all that much that they copied so much over, because no one else is making this kind of game right now. Like, there might be some indie developer that I've never heard of that has released one or two of these before, but as far as I'm aware, they're the only ones making waves within this particular genre, which is, like, as I said before, such a thin genre that a single entry is like, okay, this is going to tide you over for the next 5 or 10 years.
Mm-hmm. And also, I mean, if the systems work and you're not, like, sick of them, then what's the problem with reusing them, right?
Totally, yeah. One thing I will mention, since it's a Wild West setting, there might be some stuff later that, within Desperados 3, that isn't particularly great in terms of indigenous culture and stuff like that. That kind of goes part and parcel with making a game within this specific setting, but from what I saw within 3, I couldn't tell whether they have any of that in there or not.
Yeah, there are some there are some strings attached when you decide to do the Wild West. So there are some possible issues you're bringing along for the ride.
Yeah.
All right, well, that sounds pretty cool. It definitely wasn't a game that would have been on my radar. So it was good to hear about it, because I doubt I would have ever heard anything about it otherwise.
Yeah, and the game they made earlier, Shadow Tactics, from what I've seen, it's fairly critically acclaimed by everyone, and as soon as I mentioned who made Desperados 3 on Twitter, a bunch of people chimed in to be like, oh yeah, Shadow Tactics, I love that. So it seems like this could find its audience pretty easily.
Cool, cool. I have a smaller thing to talk about. Terraria put out its big last update, the Journey's End update, and I'm trying to get my, I rented a dedicated server. I'm trying to get it up and running. There are some quirks with this update and dedicated servers, but I've been a long time Terraria fan. I think Terraria is a game that, people look at and they're like, oh, it's 2D Minecraft, right? And I think that's really misleading. I think the game is a lot more than that. And I think part of what makes this update so great is it makes it easier to see that. Because they added a bunch of stuff, but the thing that I feel like is worth talking about, really, without going too in-depth, is the new Journey mode. And the Journey mode is kind of like a compromise between, a Minecraft creative mode and a regular mode, in a way that I think is really brilliant. First of all, it just starts you out with better equipment. You just start out with, like, okay, you've got iron tools, and also you start out with a pair of wings, which, that's one of the things about, like, the original Terraria, is that you start out, you know, with like a copper pickaxe and, you know, like a short sword, right? And it's like, oh, you will, like, over time, you'll get access to this and you upgrade your tools. And then there comes this moment where you get, like, boots that let you wall jump. And you're like, oh, okay, interesting. And then you get a grappling hook. And you're like, oh, huh, all right. And then you get, like, mechanical wings, and you're like, okay, what are we doing now? I thought this was Minecraft. And the game just keeps unfolding things like that, and your abilities get more and more wild. By the end of the game, when I first played it, I had a character who had a pair of, like, you know, like steampunk biomechanical wings. I had a double jump. I had a grappling hook that had, like, four different chains, so I could latch onto four things at once. I could summon a unicorn to ride on, and my hair changed color depending on the type of terrain I was standing on.
Jeez. Okay. Yeah, that has a lot more going for it than I expected. Like,
yeah. It gets really wild, and also there's a bunch of, like, interesting boss stuff. And I feel like Journey mode does a good job of, with that new, like, with starting you off with better tools and with wings, surfacing from the jump, like, no, there's more here than you think. Because originally in Terraria, it takes a little while for you to figure out that there's something below the surface. And I think that design is worthwhile, but it's only worthwhile for people who are willing to dig for it. If you're a person who's going to touch the game once and be like, oh, okay, it's Minecraft and bounce off, then obviously that design choice didn't help you.
Yeah.
But the real thing about Journey mode is it's very smart compromise towards creative mode. It's called research. So let's say you get a piece of wood, right?
Mm-hmm.
You can pull up a menu and there's an option called research, and you put that piece of wood in there and it says you're going to need 99 more of these. And you're like, to research it. And you're like, okay. So you get 100 pieces of wood and you put them in the research thing, and then you hit research. And this, like, very satisfying UI bit of, like, a hydraulic press, like, crunches in and destroys the wood. The wood is gone. And says, okay, here's a menu of all the items you've researched. You can just make them, infinite of them, anytime you want. You can just open this menu and click and have as much wood as you want because you researched it.
Oh, wow, that sounds awesome. Like, that, like, even with something less hardcore, like Animal Crossing, a feature like that would be so welcome.
And it's wonderful because it's not like Minecraft creative mode where it's just like you start off with infinite of everything. You have to do the work to get it, but they're not interested in making you grind. Once you've done it, they're like, okay. And a lot of items, like, the limit isn't, you know, you don't have to get 100 of something, right? Like, I found an item, a very common rare item. I know that's ironic, but like for a rare item, it's fairly common, called a cloud in a jar. It's a equipable item that lets you double jump. I only needed to research one of those. So I got it, I immediately researched it, and then I made one for myself, and then I made another one, which I threw to Nick, who was playing with me. And I was like, there, now we can both double jump.
Yeah, it something like that sounds like it's a useful feature to bring friends along and get them up to speed if they have been lagging behind or are just starting out for the first time.
Absolutely. And that's a large thing that I used to, I didn't think of it as a problem, but thinking back to it, it clearly was one from previous versions of Terraria, where what would happen would be you and your friend would be playing on the same world, and then you would, like, you know, your friend would get really into it and play a bunch over a couple of days while you'd be, you know, working or going to school or whatever. And you'd come back and your friend would be way advanced in tech. And you'd be like, oh, well, I guess I'm kind of irrelevant here. Now that's not an issue at all. You are completely collaborative, and if someone makes progress, they can just pass it to you.
That sounds like even... That sounds like an even better idea than how Death Stranding handles collaboration. Like, it's... Like, hearing all of this, I never would have expected it because I wasn't someone who dismissed Terraria as side-scrolling Minecraft. It was just one of those things where it seemed very intimidating from the outside. Mm-hmm. So hearing about all these accessibility features or just features that bring people along like this, that's got me really interested in giving it a shot.
And then the journey mode does have a few other features. Generally, there's just an extra menu called the journey menu, which, like, you tap it and you can, like, you can just adjust the weather on the fly. You can have it set to, you know, like, completely random weather, or you can just be like, no, I want it to rain, or, like, I want it to rain really hard right now. I want enemy spawns to multiply by 5. I want enemy spawns to stop. I want the enemies to get more powerful. I want to turn on god mode because right now I'm mining and I don't want anyone to kill me. Just leave me alone. I just want to mine. It's really, really, really smart. I think it's such a spectacular change to a game that I already loved a lot.
Have they mentioned whether they're going to bring that to other platforms as well? Like, I would. Oh, wow.
Yes,
okay.
It's coming to everything.
Even the Vita?
Well, okay, not the Vita. Fine. Fine. You called me out. It's also not coming to the fucking Philips CDI. And before you say, well, 6. Terraria didn't come out for the Philips CDI. It came out for the... Are you sure it didn't come out for the Philips CDI? It came out for a lot of systems. It didn't come out for the Philips CDI. This is a big...
somewhere out there, though, a homebrew person is working away getting it compatible for Philips CDI.
Cool. We got it running on the Amiga. Place that accent. No one can. It's a fake accent. I have one more big game, but I think we're going to keep going back and forth. Jen, what do you got?
I played something... Well, I did spend one of my vacation days playing through the entirety of Deliver Us the Moon. It's a Kickstarter-backed game from late last year about... essentially, it takes place in 2059. It's... In a world where Earth is...
America has collapsed, and you're delivering the moon to various people, and they're like, I don't know if I can reconnect with the United States anymore. And you're like, well, here's the moon. And they're like, okay, you got me, Sam Porter bitches. I'm sorry, you were talking.
That's okay. But yeah, it's one of those... Basically, Earth exhausted all its natural resources, so they developed something on the moon that basically allows them to send a microwave beam over to a satellite dish, and that gives Earth electricity. But around 2054 or so, the moon went dark, and people were like, oh, we don't even have the electricity to actually go up there and fix it. So...
Oh, jeez.
5 years later, after a bunch of scientific advancements, you're basically the single human sent up to the moon to resolve things and figure out what happened. And as it turns out, Bioshock happened. Like, not necessarily a bunch of monsters running around, though you do run into, like, these helper robots that have been reprogrammed to shoot deadly lasers at you. basically, well, I guess this is getting into spoilers or something like that for, like, a 5 or 6 hour game.
Let's vague tweet.
Okay. Basically, you find out that something similar to BioShock shit happened there, and you spend most of the game, like, trying to keep yourself alive by doing bits of maintenance on the side, which is probably my favorite part. Like, from the word go, you're frantically launching the rocket to the moon, and you're in the cockpit and turning all these various knobs and flipping these switches to get the rocket going. And it's kind of like, okay, this busy work with a little bit of pressure here is kind of exciting. And you spend time, like, diverting resources from one section of this from this station above the moon to give you electricity. And then at some point you have to turn off life support and make your way carefully from station to station, making sure that you gather oxygen tanks on the way, because you only have, like, 3 minutes worth of oxygen in your suit at a time.
What? So everyone's dead, right?
Mostly, yeah.
Because if not, isn't turning off oxygen a really screwed up thing to do?
Well, it's, in this part anyway, you're in a station above the moon. So you have to get all the electricity and parts ready so you can take the space elevator down to the moon. But it pretty much is mostly a ghost town when you get there. And it does the Tacoma method of storytelling, where you'll find specific areas that have silhouettes of people. And you have it your own trusty AI robotic floating buddy that can synchronize with those areas and show you a playback of what happened with these silhouettes of people.
Okay.
But yeah, it tries to look at questions like, okay, is Earth really worth saving if resources are going to be this limited and we aren't entirely sure whether we're going to be able to be the saviors of mankind or the Earth like we thought we were? And it also...
No! Sorry.
But yeah, it deals with that stuff. It deals with power struggles going on there. And, I think it's a pretty serviceable story. It didn't really blow me away or anything like that, but it's nice to just sometimes be in a situation where you're like, okay, I'm on the moon. I need to take this power couplet over to this power station and turn off this one bay so I can get into this other bay and explore around there a little bit.
And you know what? The moon is cool. I don't need much of an excuse just to be like, hey, I'm on the moon. This rules.
Yeah, there are parts where you get into your little moon buggy and you're going off the ridges of the moon, and you basically get a little bit of hang time and jostling around in your rover buggy thing, and that's always kind of fun. Like, there's something nice about just driving around in this almost soundless environment, watching as your car buckles around in lowered gravity.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right. That sounds cool.
Yeah, it's on Game Pass right now if anyone wants to check it out. So I know that a lot of us here ended up signing up for Game Pass. So it's one of those things where it's like, oh, okay, it's there. And it's a neat enough setting that's like, why not?
Yeah, that's cool. It's always nice to have that moment of like, and also this is on Game Pass. So like, it makes it a lot easier to recommend games because it's always hard to do the mental calculus of like, okay, well, I know what money is worth to me. I don't know what it's worth to you. But like, as long as something is already included, I'm not going to say free, because Game Pass is not free, but already included in a purchase you likely have. And it's like, hey, it's easy to say, this is worth checking out.
Totally. It's going to be interesting when I eventually have to start paying for Game Pass again, just because, like, they were running a promotion last year where you could try out Game Pass Ultimate for $1, and for whatever reason, Microsoft systems were like, oh, okay, you already have an Xbox Live Gold subscription, we're going to transfer all of that time over to Game Pass for you for no extra charge, so...
Wow. It's
like, oh, okay, I'm riding off this for like a year or so, but... Yeah, it's a good enough service that I could see myself continuing to use it even after I have to pay for it again.
Yeah, I am having a great time with Game Pass myself. It's been especially, that's one thing I will note is it's been especially useful when I had guests to entertain, right? Because this is weird. I know this is a weird thing that I do and most people don't do. I bet games that I want to play. And then sometimes other people come over and you're like, oh, you don't like the same games as me. And I was like, oh, this is not a problem. I can just download something you'll play. I would never buy Goat Simulator, but my 7-year-old nephew thinks Goat Simulator is hilarious. And he cackles while headbutting people into the water and saying, I'm ruining their lives. And I'm like, yes, you are, buddy. I hope this is not a sign about your real world behavior, but have fun.
Yeah, similarly, I probably wouldn't pay for NBA 2K20 in real life just because, like, it's a gigantic microtransaction money pit, but if I'm just playing it for free and I can just run skirmishes, I can just run quick play matches whenever, and people like sports games, so it seems easy enough to throw something like that on.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of sports games... I am here to talk about MLB The Show 20, and therefore also 19 and 18, because, listen, it's how sports games do. And Super Mega Baseball 3. I'm going to have a full-on article about this, so I'm not going to go too crazy deep. But fortunately, I have so many thoughts, it'll be fine. I'm not going to spoil the article here, right? So I'm playing Super Mega Baseball 3 on Switch. I'm playing MLB The Show 20 on PlayStation 4 because for the moment, it's all it's out on. It will come out on Xbox later. It might come out on PC as well. I don't remember.
Wait, the show is coming out on Xbox?
Yes, their contract with MLB changed.
Oh, okay. I always thought that was a Sony company that made that. That's pretty cool.
It is. It is a Sony-owned... It is Sony San Diego, I think, makes those games. But as I say, their contract with MLB changed, so they don't have a choice.
Okay, interesting.
I mean, I assume in their negotiations they had a choice, and they decided it was not worth paying the extra money or whatever. I don't know. I wasn't behind the scenes.
Yeah, that's a change for the good, obviously.
Yeah. But, okay, so... I like baseball. My baseball fandom is a little bit weird in that, at no point in my life have I had, like, access to, like, cable TV. That's just not a thing. I mean, you know, I've had it at, like, hotels, but never where I lived, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I've never gotten used to the idea of watching sports on TV. And thanks to the Major League Baseball, being really backwards, I live in a blackout zone. Do you know that term?
Yeah, it's something other sports do too, where basically if they're playing a game in the same city or town that you live in, maybe even state, then you don't get that game on your TV.
Right. The thing that they do that literally no one else does is they extend that to their online service. If you are within their blackout zone, and I'm within their blackout zone for the Los Angeles Angels, you are not allowed to buy their online service.
Even if you have, like, the MLB All Access Pass?
You can't buy the MLB All Access Pass. They will not sell it to you.
What the hell?
It's bizarre. And so, I literally don't have a legal way to watch baseball live. Because I'm not the landlord here, so I can't install cable, and I can't buy that. So, anyway, long story short, my baseball fandom is like, rarely fed because it's hard for me to get the content, right? And so occasionally it flares up and flares up rather intensely. And one of those flare-ups occurred because people, like, well, first, Super Mega Baseball 3 came out for the Switch, and I heard good things, and I was like, I've been a fan of MLB The Show, classically. I would love to check this out. And then I also saw friends picking up The Show 20, and I was like, sure, I'll pick up 20. I had passed it because I'd gotten 18 and 19, and they didn't feel that different to me, but I'll check out 20. And I am generally a person who likes arcade-style games better than simulation games, right? Forza's fine. I have a good time with Forza. I certainly like Burnout better. And I certainly only like Forza Horizon. I don't give a damn about Forza Motorsport. Similarly, like, I don't want to play NBA 2K. I want to play NBA Jam. I don't want to play Madden, but I would happily play Blitz. And what I'm figuring out is, not just because of my baseball fandom, I don't see a point in arcade baseball.
Interesting, because, like, when I was briefly... Well, I'd say that when I was a younger kid, I was more into baseball than I ended up being for, like, the next 10 or 15 years of my life, but... I was a huge fan of backyard baseball back in the day. Like, they had these ridiculous kids that could... and you basically played baseball with these kids, and it was super cartoonish and over the top, and I always had a great time with that.
I mean, I could see giving it the, like, Inazuma 11 or, like, Captain Tsubasa treatment, where it's like they have, like, anime superpowers, and you use your, like, your Grand Slam power, and you hit the ball to the moon or whatever. I could see you doing, like, ridiculous hyperbole, but the sort of, like, the arcade-y style of, for example, Super Mega Baseball 3 seems pointless to me. I think that's a good game, but the problem is, for me, what I'm finding is a lot of the appeal of baseball is it's the angel in the details, right? Baseball is a sport that has so many weird little rules and exceptions and details, and those are what make the sport great. I had a tweet take off that was me playing. I'm playing the Road to the Show mode, which is one thing that this is the reason I think to play baseball games. I don't want to play as a team. I mean, I'll do that sometimes. The real fun thing is to pick a player, is to create a player and follow them through their career. And I can talk more about that. It's a really fun mode where you work your way up from AA to AAA to the major leagues. You put on a show for the scouts. You try out different stuff. I think it's really fun mode. And I was playing that, and I was playing my pitcher, and I was throwing balls and strikes like you do, and the game doesn't have, like, you can turn this on, but by default, the game doesn't have robot umpires. It has simulations of real umpires. They take actual umpires that exist in the MLB, and they analyze the way that they have treated, they have called balls and strikes, and they use that to say, okay, this is the scientific strike zone, and this is what they tend to call on a person-by-person basis.
Huh.
And there are a couple of things that this does. One of them is you can say, it's so-and-so behind the plate. I know I can get away with more high pitches. Or you can be, like, one thing you can do with basically all of them, like... I have a pitcher, my main character, I have multiple characters because it's fun to explore the options, but my main character is a character who has really high control. I'm really good at throwing the ball where I want to throw it. I'm very accurate, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I just throw a ton of strikes, and over the course of the game, you can see the umpire settle into a groove where, just in general, they're more likely to call my pitches strikes because clearly all I'm throwing is strikes. And so I can start to be a little more generous. And the really great thing is occasionally, and I feel like they upped the odds of this in the show 20, which I love. I think it's great. Occasionally, the umpire is just blatantly wrong. And that tweet that went viral was, it was two strikes, and I threw a ball that was low and outside. It was just a bad pitch. And it left my hands, and I was like, damn. And the umpire was like, strike, you're out. And not only that, then the in-game commentary, which is a crew of three professional MLB commentators, were like, boy, I don't know about that call. And then it cuts to the batter, and the batter, steps back and sort of, like, taps the bat on his shoulder, and then steps forward, like, okay, that was a ball, ready for the next pitch. And then he freezes and looks back at the umpire. He's like, wait, what? You said that was a strike? And he's like, okay. And it walks off. And the whole thing is, that is the real charm of baseball. If you play baseball perfectly by the rules, with all the rules working as they are, it's a fucking boring sport. I love baseball. It's kind of boring. It's a bunch of people taking turns getting to be athletes. Most of the time, they just stand there.
Yeah.
Yeah, the fun stuff is stuff like the infield fly rule is like the umpires. It's like throwing all these different pitches and having instances where, like, if you throw a pitch and the other person gets their so here's a weird interaction, right? If you throw a pitch, if it's two strikes, you throw a pitch, the batter gets their bat on it but doesn't manage to knock it away, like if it just taps their bat and keeps going. If the catcher catches the ball and holds on to it, that's a strike. If the catcher drops it, even if they drop it and foul, that's a hit, and they've got to run or they'll get thrown out. Or another one that's weird, this is one that I watched our mutual friend Jackson come to terms with. The rule of a double play, the rule of any play, is if someone... it has like a force out, which is basically the ball got hit, it was not caught in the air, and so they have to run to the next base because someone is running to the base they're currently on, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you do a double play where you get the ball, like the ball gets thrown to you, and you step on the base and then throw it to the next base to get the force out there, the umpires are incredibly forgiving. By the rules, you have to catch the ball, step on the base, and then throw it. You will very rarely see that happen. Usually they will catch the ball, throw it, and then step on the base. And when they step on the base, the ball is already gone. So technically, they should not be out. But double plays are cool, so the umpires will just let them have it.
That's ridiculous. Okay.
It's the stuff that makes baseball good. It's like, as I say, baseball is a game that is made out of a set of rules that over time we have kind of proven don't fucking work.
Yeah, like, I know this has been talked about endlessly in our circles, but I watched the whole John Boyce Dorktown documentary on the Seattle Mariners, and the thing that makes that so interesting is you just hear about all of the absolutely baffling things the Mariners have done within their career, and yet have kept a big fan base, because people, for the most part anyway, don't seem like they're there to watch them win. They're just there because they like that team a whole lot, and they get up to some weird antics.
For sure. I mean, like, I am, as I mentioned, I am an Angels fan. The Angels have Mike Trout, who is the best player in baseball. And I'm not just saying that as a fan. If you look at the stats, if you look at the assessment of every, like, analyst, Mike Trout is an astonishing, unbelievably good player. We also have Shohei Ohtani, who is a Japanese pitcher who has been a little bit of a disappointment because he's gotten a few injuries, but he's an incredibly good pitcher who's also an incredibly good batter, and that doesn't happen. If you're a good pitcher, you're not a good batter. So we have two of the best players in baseball. Our team is dog shit. Our team is terrible. And there's something magnetic about that. There's, like... you know, obviously I like seeing my team win, But it's not about that. It's about seeing our personality in play. It's about seeing stuff go down. I don't know. The thing that I am finding, and again, I'll write more about this. I'll write a full-ass article. But I think Super Mega Baseball 3 is a good game, but I don't know if it understands what makes baseball so magnetic and charismatic to me. I don't think it understands how weird baseball is and how, like, how silly baseball... For a game that is inherently silly, Super Mega Baseball 3 invents silliness, right? It's these people who have, like big heads and they make silly expressions with their face. It's not like the rules of the sport are silly, which is what baseball is.
The show seems like one of those weird... The show seems like one of those interesting examples of the... of trying to get as close to life as possible, and that only making things wackier in terms of how they play out. And it's that dedication to, at least from what I've seen from your clips and what you've talked about, it's that dedication to try and perfectly mapping that, to try and perfectly map out that weirdness that causes... Like, it doesn't really sound like there's anything else like it, just from that clip. I watched that clip of yours over and over again with the weird call, just because it's such a... You can even read the commentator's responses, almost sarcastic, being like, oh yeah, they have a really tough job, so I can see why this was... I can see why this might have been a mistake. Or I can see why they might have made a mistake here. And it's one of those things where it seems like it gets closest... The closest that I can imagine, anyway, to mimic how commentators in real life adjust to weird shit happening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's one thing. One thing I will say is, as we have, like, Madden and NBA 2K, which you've already noted is a really greedy game.
Mm-hmm.
MLB The Show, like, if you want to play their, like, their fantasy mode, they'll sell you card packs. They can be, like, greedy with money, but in general... Every year, they just put out such a high-quality product that is such a labor of love. Can you... I mean, honestly, can you imagine how much work it must have been to not only program umpires with individual strike zones, but then to be like, okay, and we need to program and design the commentary to sometimes be like... Like, to sometimes be skeptical of the call, and sometimes to also screw up themselves. Sometimes you'll throw a bad pitch, and the commentary also doesn't catch it because they're also fallible. Or sometimes, like, here's another thing. That same game where I threw that terrible pitch that got called a strike, that umpire got a lot of booze. And later in that game, I started throwing pitches that were strikes, that started to be called balls, because the umpire was now self-conscious about it.
Wow. Okay.
It's so good! It's such a labor of love, and that team putting out a game every year, and sometimes I feel like not innovating as much as I would like, but that's because it's a yearly release. They don't have a choice, right? They really just put out an incredible game. They work so hard, and I am so impressed.
I wish they had focused on that in the marketing instead of stuff like, oh yeah, this time we made the stadiums look even more realistic, because as someone who isn't an avid baseball watcher, that doesn't appeal that much to me, but hearing about how accurate the umpires are to a fault, and the fault is sort of the point, is like, mm-hmm. Oh, this is awesome.
They also, this year, they're correctly simulating the AA and AAA tiers, the sort of the minor leagues. They actually have real players, whereas previously they were like auto-generated. So that's also cool.
Yeah, I hope they're paying those. I hope the AA players and minor leagues get some sort of compensation from that, just because I've been following the news whenever it comes up, and it seems like those players were already getting paid shit, and now they're talking about not even paying them at all because of the epidemic going on, so...
Yeah, so the situation was, they looked into the contract, and MLB The Show has had the license to use them, to use the rosters of AA and AAA for years. They just haven't had the time to do it. So they did not get paid any additional money for doing this. But that's an MLB side issue. The MLB treats the minor leagues like shit, and it's an embarrassment.
Yeah.
It's disgusting. They need to treat those people better. They're hard players. I've gone to see, like, minor league games. It's really fun, and those people play their asses off. And just pay these people a living wage. This isn't that complicated.
Totally.
It is alarmingly close to a con where you string these people along with the promise that one day they'll break big and get treated like normal humans. It's pretty gross.
Yeah, I feel like that could be said for a lot of the big sports companies, the big sports organizations like the NFL as well.
You could probably just take the word sports out of there, friend. I hear you, but also, you could probably just say companies.
Yeah, true. Very true.
Yeah, it's a bummer, and I hope they treat them better. Honestly, my hope is that this is a step towards that, because one thing they do, and I don't know the reason they do this, but you can't import a character. You can import a character from game to game. You can only import from the previous game, and you can only do so if they've played for at least a year. Like an in-game year. And so I have a character that I started in MLB 18, and I wanted to bring them into 20, but when I brought them into 19, I'd only played them for like 3 or 4 months. And so I've had to go back to 19 to play them a bunch more so I could import them. And in 18 and 19, those characters are randomly generated, and now they're real characters, right? They're real people, I should say, not characters. And I am hopeful that maybe this additional exposure will make people more aware of them. I'm not saying pay these people an exposure. I'm not a monster. But if they're not getting paid at all, at least maybe exposure will help rather than erasure. You know?
Totally.
It is pretty funny, though, having, like, I was playing my character who is currently playing for the Rangers. And, God, that's a bummer. I hate the Rangers, but... that's how it goes. And I was pitching against the Oakland Athletics. And I was like, okay, yes, I know you, I know you, I know you. I don't know you, but judging by your voice, the voice acting around you, I'm pretty sure you're a real person. And then up to the plate came Henry Tomori, who is a, like, 22-year-old with a baby face and a huge, like, vaudeville curling mustache. And I'm like, you are auto-generated. Who the fuck are you? It's very funny.
Yeah. Seeing your tweets about it and just Jackson getting into it as well has definitely made me think, yeah, I should probably pick this up at some point. Because this seems like it's worth putting some time into.
If folks are interested because of this conversation or others, I will say... the games do get better every year, but they are still sports games, right? I think you could be perfectly happy buying the previous year's game at a deep discount. And then also around October every year, the current game goes down to like $20 because the season is about to end. So right now it's $60. You can pay $60 if you have it lying around. I did because I'm stupid. But... you're not going to lose very much if you go back to a previous year. You'll still have a great time, and it might be a better financial decision.
Mm-hmm.
And you can get the delight of going and playing your ass out at the Scout Showcase, and then getting fucking like drafted by the Toronto Blue Jays and just sobbing.
Is that what happened to you?
Why do you say that, Jen? It was just an example. It would never happen to anyone like me. I'd never be a fucking two-time Cy Young winner saddled with the Toronto Blue Jays, and then they traded me to the Rangers.
Oh.
They traded me. They traded a two-time Cy Young winner.
Fun fact about Texas Rangers, I ended up throwing an opening pitch at one of their games, and it was a good pitch. It was a strike, and I always felt pretty good about that.
What kind of pitch was it?
I think it definitely wasn't fast enough to be considered a fastball, so I imagine it was closer to... Well, is there a version of a fastball that's not fast and just goes straight?
I mean, in Japanese, they call fastballs straights, so you could just say you threw it straight.
Okay, I threw it straight.
There you go. There you go. Fastballs don't actually have to be fast, is the real thing. I have seen some slow fastballs. It's most fastball just means is the nice way of saying you didn't do anything fancy. Though also, you see some people. I have seen in person someone throw a 99 mile per hour fastball, and it's like, Jesus Christ. What are you supposed to do? You just have to, like, you can't even wait for them to swing their arm. You have to swing your bat before they've thrown the ball. It's fucked up.
Going to baseball games always kind of terrified me as a kid, because it was like, oh, there's no net here if the ball comes my way, and I'm not good at catching things, so rip to me if anything happens.
They do a lot more nets these days.
Oh, okay. But yeah,
it's a lot safer, so.
Yeah, as a kid it was kind of terrifying, but it's good to hear that it's safer now.
You know, while I'm talking about baseball, I have to... So, I hate the Dodgers, right? I think probably anyone who knows me knows that. I am not quiet about my hate of the Dodgers. However, I think it was last year, maybe it was 2 years ago, I went to an Angels versus Dodgers game, and I saw Dodgers pitcher Clayton Kershaw pitch, and he has a knuckle curveball that was just magical. Oh my god. Sometimes you just watch a pitch and you're like, what the fuck? How are you this talented? It is incredible.
One of those I hate you, but I also respect you situations.
Yeah, though also it is really funny that Clayton Kershaw, just anytime you go into the postseason, Clayton Kershaw just chokes so hard. Though also, last year, it was not his fault, because the Astros were fucking cheating. So, you know. I say fuck the Dodgers as a system, but at this exact moment, the real sentiment, the correct sentiment is fuck the Astros. So, you heard about all of that, I assume.
Actually, no. I guess I'll have some research I need to do after this.
Oh, man. Yeah, they were stealing, like, signs. So they knew what pitch was coming. And they were then signaling it to their batters. It's fucked up. They're such fucking cheaters.
Like, by stealing signs, you mean hand signals?
Yes. Yeah, so basically, in baseball, the way, like, pitches work is that the pitcher has a repertoire of pitches that they throw, and the catcher knows that and will do little hand signs to indicate what pitch they want.
Uh-huh.
And the Astros were watching the catcher with binoculars and then signaling to the batter what pitch was coming.
Wow, that's shitty.
Yeah, it was very, very shitty. So in that instance, I don't like the Dodgers, and I gloat when they get destroyed, but you can't really blame Clayton Kershaw for failing in the offseason, because as a pitcher, if the batter knows what pitch is coming, it doesn't matter how good you are, you're fucked.
Mm-hmm.
It's not quite rock, paper, scissors, but it is in that vicinity. And obviously, if someone knows what you're going to throw in rock, paper, scissors, you can guess how that fucking goes. So, fuck the Astros. Anyway, do you have any other games you want to talk about?
I could talk a little bit about Dishonored 2, I guess.
Yeah, please do.
So, Dishonored 1 was a game that I liked quite a bit up until the ending, where... it revealed that it was taking a lot more of my actions into account than I thought it was, and it basically does the thing where it's tracking everything you do and creating an invisible tally of how good or bad you are. And as it turns out, just because, I don't know, they make the killing mechanics feel pretty good in that game, and... they spend a lot of time talking about how they want you to play it your way and give you a bunch of tools in your repertoire. But a lot of them, which aren't necessarily coded as doing something evil, end up putting points on your bad side. And like the whole end sequence of that first game has the person at the boatyard being like, you know what, fuck you. I'm rowing you to your destination, but fuck you, and I'm about to kill, and I'm gonna try and kill you once we get to the dock right here. And from that point on, I was like, oh, this is really frustrating.
Yeah, I that's probably the most off-put I've ever been by a game's ending, is the game starting out and being like, okay, the Empire has been taken over by a fascist regime of drug lords and slavers. You've got to assassinate them. And I say, okay, I can do that. And then I did that. And they're like, I can't believe you would kill people. And I'm like, are you fucking serious right now?
Yeah. And it turns out at some point in the past, I think it was during one of the, Bethesda's been pretty generous about sales with all their games. So I think at some point it was like, okay, Prey will be cheaper if you get it with Dishonored 2. And I was like, oh, okay, I imagine I could play that at some point. And since it's Arkane Studios' 20th anniversary, and I saw an interesting no-clip documentary about the various canceled projects they worked on, like Spielberg's LMNO and a Ravenholm side game for Valve.
It was like, wait. Spielberg's LMFAO? He made a game based on the Party Rock is in the house tonight!
You bust this alien out of prison, and you got to Party Rock your way to somewhere safe.
Man.
But, that sounds yeah. But yeah, I ended up installing it, and I don't think that... Like, going back into it, it's immediately apparent that, oh, okay, they haven't really changed the way the morality works in this game, and it'll still frown at me if I kill a bunch of people and all that. But once I acknowledged how that was just how it was going to be, I spent more time focused on the design of the levels themselves and, just the way that everything else is built around it. And Dishonored 2 is such a pretty game to move around in, and it's really impressive what they've done with the levels. And I'm still really early in, but I just appreciate how much they've put into the various design of various things. Like, they've really gone out of their way to make Karnica feel like a unique place compared to Dunwall, and it feels lived in a way, like seeing various people going about their business in a, once again, totalitarian regime. And you just hear a lot of side conversations that are pretty engaging. And you could do a bunch of really cool things as Emily Caldwin specifically. I unlocked an ability to... Like, I unlocked the Shadow Form, which, as I understand, made Six pretty motion sick when V tried to play this, but,
Yeah, I think I had an instance where, I don't know if it's an upgrade or what. I kind of want to go back to the game, but, yeah, I had an instance where I used it to, climb along a wall that had a lot of balconies, and it, clings to the wall, so as I was going, over balconies and ridges, the camera was just, wavering like crazy, and it made me very nauseous.
Yeah. But yeah,
Oh, please continue.
No worries. One of the upgrade forms of that is basically turning into a rat to get through small spaces. And around the time when I got that ability, the game was setting up this thing. It's like, oh, okay, we want you to go into this heavily guarded front of this wall of light, which is basically the game's insta-kill security system. And, you can use this hacking machine to break the wall of light so you can go through. And I just circled my way around the building instead, turned into a rat and ran through one of the grates there, skipped that whole section, and it was like, oh, yeah, this kind of game has its merits, and you don't really see many of these kinds of games because they're super expensive to make with... the AAA fidelity going on, and they don't sell particularly well because they're hard to market, but there's just so many neat things you can do, and some of them, well, most of them, it feels like the level designers have thought of everything, but there's still moments where you can tell that you're cheesing your way through an area, and it's still awesome because it's like, hey, I spec myself in this way, and because of that, I can do this. And I'm coming up to a point where everyone says is, like, one of the major highlights of the game, the Clockwork Mansion.
Mm-hmm.
And it was so good to just... I'm as far as the lobby in it, and I immediately knew I had to stop there for the night, but I just listened to the audio log in the foyer, and it's like, oh, hey, welcome. If you're here for an appointment, go through the door. If you're not here for an appointment, still go through the door, but there's a pretty good chance you'll die. And it's this excellent sort of sensation that every new level that I go into has its own unique feel to it, and it feels like I'm stepping into a mini episode with each one of them. Sort of like how Hitman and Hitman 2, the most recent Hitman that had those names anyway,
mm-hmm.
Did a great job of giving each level its own feel and method of getting through it. But,
yeah. I won't spoil for you, but, one of the things that I really love about the level is the enemies in that level are robots, or at least some of them are.
Mm-hmm.
And they are not ready for release. So, like, one of the things that will happen is they have, like, designer audio, you know, like designer art, where, like, they'll spot you, and then you'll hear a voice from the robot, and it is the voice of the programmer going, and this is the audio that plays when they spot an intruder. It's so funny.
Yeah, there's so much attention to detail in that regard, and the various things that I've seen that, I don't know, it feels very much like the world is moving at a pace that is different than yours, and it, in some ways, that can totally fuck up a plan, but it's good that it fucks up your plan, even if you feel the need to quick save and quick load and make sure that you just force your plan through. It's mm-hmm. interesting how things can so wildly change in one part of the level to the next. Like, without getting too much into the reveal of the whole bit in the hospital, like, when I went to the area and it was like, oh, okay, I'm looking for this researcher and I also looking for this killer, two birds with one stone. And then I got there, I spent a little bit of time in there, I did some poking around, and suddenly I figured out why it was two birds with one stone, and it instantly changed tone into a horror game. And it's so effective because you don't expect that to happen.
Yeah, that's good. That's good.
Yeah, I imagine other people have written about this extensively because it's a four-year game, and there's a lot of really smart game critics out there. About how weird it is now that you're in a situation where it's like, okay, I was the benevolent queen, but now I've been dethroned, so obviously for the good of the empire, I need to be the queen again, right? And, that bit, maybe, from what I've heard anyway, doesn't sound like it resolves in a satisfactory way, or even a way where that allows much reflection, but, I feel like all of the mini stories within the levels make up for the fact that I'm not jiving with the main story too much.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I'm really excited when I eventually finish this that I'll be able to play Death of the Outsider, because some of the things I've heard about that, like how they give you all of the abilities maxed out from the get-go and just let you go hog wild, that seems like it'd be pretty fun.
Yeah, the thing they did with... I am interested in coming back to Dishonored 2. You've sort of piqued my interest again, and I don't know, maybe we'll do something with that. I'm certainly not promising anything. But the thing that they do with both of the DLC for both Dishonored 1 and Dishonored 2 is they have you playing as characters who are bad people, and so they just throw out the morality system, and they're just like, just kill as many people as you want. And I think that's what that game needs.
Yeah, and it's good that it offers both like that. Like, I do remember playing the DLC for the first Dishonored. I think it's like a part one and part two that they usually package together now. But it's nice having that change of pace and just seeing things from a different character. Like, the fun twist at the first one is that, oh, you're playing the person who killed the Empress in the very first moment of the first game. And you get to see what his life is like. And it sounds like, well, maybe this is just me guessing, but the fact that the boat captain in Dishonored 2 seems to have a missing eye, where the protagonist of Death of the Outsider has a artificial eye, makes me think that they're the same person. And
yes, they are.
Okay, yeah. And they seem like a pretty cool person, like just talking with them on the boat. They're a lot more jaded about you being the former ruler and aren't necessarily, they're mostly putting up with your shit because someone has to fix things, but they aren't going to take much guff from you about how things are done. Or, look, you might have had a bunch of resources back then, but this is how we do things, so get used to it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's she's a cool character, for sure.
Yeah. It's nice that they're getting, it's nice that Arkane seems to be having their own little resurgence during their 20th anniversary, because they made some cool games in the past. Even that Might and Magic game that I'm not super fond of like everyone else is. It's cool that you can just kick people off ledges and just use your foot for everything.
Folks, I hear you. Don't take that out of context. That'd be a bad thing to do. That'd be mean. Don't be mean to Jen.
Okay. I feel like I have one of those moments almost every single time we record now.
I mean, to be fair, I'm kind of looking for them. It's not really your fault. But also, you did say use your foot for everything, which, you know.
That's fair. But yeah, it seems like all of those games are on a pretty steep sale right now. So if any of this sounds interesting to you, and you like, for example, in Dishonored 2, where all of the guards just ride around on a fucking roller coaster, like a buggy monorail roller coaster thing. It's fascinating. There's a bit where I was climbing a hill and it was straight up that roller coaster incline sound. It was like, wow. This seems incredibly impractical, but it is cool as hell. And sometimes you need something like that, especially for someone like me who just loves geeking out over bizarre fantasy methods of transportation.
Well, that sounds really cool. You made me wanna check that game back out after my initial bad experience. But I think also it was bad timing. I was playing that game right around as I was getting ready to move, and I was pretty overwhelmed at the time. So I'd be happy to give it another shot.
Yeah. I definitely like to hear what you think, especially since you've put in a little bit more time in the game than me, at least at this moment.
Well, we'll have to come back to that then. I think until next time, we're gonna call it a podcast. We've had plenty of good discussion about video games past, and I don't know why I'm doing an outro like this. Sometimes you just find yourself being like, oh no, I've turned into an NPR talk show. What's happening?
Putting on my best Jeff Keighley impression. Well, we've seen a lot of great games, both from past, present, and future.
Yo, fuck the Oscars!
Thank you very much. I'm really proud to have your game on the stage, and I wish you the best of luck.
I was definitely not drinking before this. Jen! Why don't you tell folks if they wanted to find you on the internet, other than here, because they're here right now and they're listening to you. But they probably want to keep listening to you in some form or another. How would they do that?
So yeah, I'm at JBU3 on Twitter. You can find me in addition to at JBU3 on Twitter, most of my stuff is on patreon.com/scanlinemedia or scanlinemedia.com, which is where you're probably listening to this. And I also host a podcast called Novel Not New, a True End podcast. sometime tomorrow, I believe. Well, it'll already be recorded by the time this is out, most likely. But we're doing our episode on The Last Express, which is a really interesting adventure game by Jordan Mechner, who made Prince of Persia, Karateka, that sort of thing. I think those are the two things he's mainly known for, but he's done many iterations of both over the years, and he seems like a pretty smart guy, and I had a pretty good time with that game, so it'll be fun to talk about that.
I mean, he's got Mech right there in the name, so he's got to be a good dude. If you want to find me, I'm on Twitter at SixDetmar, SixDetmar. That's my name. And then, if you want to find my work, I'm at the same places as Jen. I'm on patreon.com/scanlandmedia and scanlandmedia.com. Trying to think if there's anything specific to call out. I guess I'll just say, so we do a weekly anime podcast called Oops All Anime over at Patreon. For $1 a month, you can get access to the whole, I believe, 123 episodes now, which is over 120 different anime that we have checked out and given you feedback as to whether or not they're worth watching. So if you want to find out what we think about your favorite show, or if you're like, hey, I'm curious about this one, we've got you covered. We also have Scanline Tabletop, which is our actual play podcast for tabletop RPGs. And that's been a real delight. I think this year has been the year of Scanline Tabletop, and I've really been excited where that's gone.
Yeah, it's been fun to get into a place where I started out being pretty inexperienced with tabletop stuff, but I feel like I'm getting my groove, and that's been an excellent experience.
Mm-hmm. But until next time, folks, peace out.
See ya.